talking about? It's our weekly catch-up with the National Party's Amy Adams.
Hi, Amy. How you going?
I'm good, Laura. How you going?
Good. It's been so long since we've talked.
I know. It has been a long time.
About, like, 3 weeks, almost a month.
Nice to hear you back.
Yeah, definitely. I hope my other volleys definitely helped out and made you comfortable.
They did a great job.
Good, good. I'm very glad. And whereabouts are you today?
Well, it's actually Canterbury Anniversary Day today, so it's a public holiday for us. So I've actually headed down into the sort of lower part of the South Island to have a bit of a weekend down here. So a bit of R&R, which is nice.
Oh, that's lovely. Like, R&R, other than that, you have to talk with me. A little bit of work. Oh, good, good. So let's jump in. Pike River mine reentry. This is something that's just been announced today. And this is something that National has opposed for ever since it's come up, really. Can you tell me a bit about how you're feeling about this decision?
Yeah, well, I don't think it's right to say we opposed it. Obviously, we were government at the time, and look, all the way through this, I know the Prime Minister and the ministers involved got the most extensive advice they could get on whether it was safe to re-enter the mine. And consistently, the advice we got was that it wouldn't be safe and there wasn't a sensible, safe way to go back in. Now, clearly, with the passage of time, the new government's got different advice and they're looking at that. But we were never opposed to the concept. We simply said that re-entry was only possible if it could be made safe. Mm-hmm. And as I said, the advice we had consistently was that that wasn't possible. And obviously, I'm not privy to the advice that the new government's had, but clearly they think they can make it in safely. And obviously, we wish them well with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the thing that I found interesting looking back at how National responded, there was kind of this insinuation that there wasn't going to be ever a safe measure. Like, no amount of safety precaution was going to make that possible, and there was not going to be a circumstance in which risking a life was going to make this possible. Do you think this is still a potential risk?
Well, as I said, I haven't seen the advice that the new government has had, and actually I personally wasn't involved when we were in government and mm-hmm. looking at the issue, but I do know that John Key in particular was very keen to see if there was a way to go in and go in safely. And the advice that we had was that simply wasn't possible. Now, as you know, I don't know whether the advice has changed, there's new technology, I simply don't know. But we were very clear that while we would go in if that was safe and possible, we were never given advice that said that was the case. Now, it's one of those situations, I think, Laura, when as politicians you absolutely understand the limits of your own knowledge. None of us are mine safety experts. We would never try and put ourselves in those shoes, and we rely on what the experts that we have around us tell us, and we had a range of experts working with us, and the clear advice we got consistently was that there wasn't a way to go in safely. Now, as I said, I can't tell you on a technical level what's changed between that advice and this advice. As I said, I haven't even seen the detail of the advice the government has, but they've taken their own advice, they've made their own decision, and we can only hope that that their re-entry plans are in fact safe.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, fingers crossed that they continue to be safe. And moving on to the unemployment rate, lowest in 10 years, which is amazing.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, absolutely. However, I did find a press release that came out from you where you were kind of skeptical about it. Can you tell me a bit about why?
No, not skeptical at all. I mean, obviously, low unemployment is a great thing, and that's something we work very hard on in our time. And you know, we all want to see people in New Zealand who can work working. That's got to be the goal of any economy. The 2 points I raised were on the day that the unemployment rate came out, there was actually a range of data released about what's happening in the labour market. And one of the other pieces of data that came out talked about the how much wages had gone up over that same period and versus how much cost of living had gone up. And what it showed was that from the Labour Cost Index, which is the official measure Stats New Zealand used to track the movement in wages, over the last quarter it had gone up 0.5%, but over the same time the cost of living had gone up 1%. So I wasn't talking about the unemployment rate in that perspective. I was simply saying we have to be very mindful that if cost of living is going up faster than people's wages, then they're not getting ahead. And that was the point I was making. The other point I did make in that press release was simply that actually it's getting harder and harder for businesses around New Zealand to find the staff they need. And while having low unemployment is a great thing, if we can't get the staff we need to do the work in the economy, then over time that is going to see things slow down. And I tell you, it's one thing I hear all around New Zealand, whether I'm down here in the lower part of South Island, whether I'm in Auckland, I was in Rotorua the other day and hearing the same message. Businesses are saying, look, we just can't get the staff we need. And that does become a real problem for how much our economy can keep growing over time. So I'm just really making those two points. But no, look, low unemployment is a good thing in anyone's book.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of want to jump back to that point you were raising about how the cost of living is rising, but our wages aren't. A little while ago, it was announced that by 2021, I believe, that the minimum wage was going to be raised to $20. So that kind of seems to parallel this conversation in that you're critical of the minimum wage being raised, but you are also acknowledging that cost of living isn't accessible for people with this low wage. So can you tell me a bit about what's going on there?
Yeah. First of all, it's not right to say we're critical of the minimum wage going up. We put the minimum wage up every year that we were in office, and the increase that the government put in place this year we thought was broadly right. What we have been critical of is moving it too fast, and we think taking it to $20 an hour by 2020, so that's over the next 18 months, is going too quickly. And I know it's easy sometimes to think, well, that's good, if minimum wages are going up, that helps with cost of living, but actually what it does is increase the cost of living. So what happens, of course, is those businesses have to pay more for staff. They've been absorbing those cost pressures to a certain extent, but if they go too fast, then they're going to put the cost of their goods and services up. And then, of course, people are getting paid more, but it costs them more to live. So the trick, I guess, is to make sure wages are rising in a way that is matched by productivity increases, so that you don't see it just pushing out in cost of living. So if you're getting paid more, but as I say, all your groceries cost more and your petrol costs more and your rent costs more, then you're not really getting ahead. So we simply say you can't just look at minimum wage increases as being the panacea to everything. Otherwise, if we could do that, why not legislate to make them $50 an hour? I mean, the reason we don't do that is because they have a significant impact on costs. And so it's getting that balance right, and we want to see them move up every year. But as I say, if you go too fast, it gets gobbled up by cost of living. Now, when we were in government, wages rose at twice the rate of inflation over the course of our 9 years. It's too soon yet to make a judgment about this government over just a couple of quarters of data. But I just did make the point that over the last quarter, it was the opposite direction. It was half the rate of inflation. And if that continues, then people won't find themselves getting ahead.
Yeah, I think my thing about it personally is when you talk about the cost of living and then say, well, if you put the wages up too high, then that's going to make the product higher, doesn't that speak to the fact that we have a market that is not got heaps of regulation around what a producer can do in terms of the product they put out? They can change and shift it based on what the market is demanding of them.
Yeah, but are you suggesting that there should be more regulation about people can charge for their products, because that would be a very different direction to the way our economy has run successfully for many, many years under governments of all sorts of colours.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think I always think about what happened in Wellington when our student living costs went up. So what happened there is we had the student living costs went up, and then our landlords were then able to change to match what students were able to pay. So that money was no longer going to students, it just went back into a rental market. So when we talk about that relationship, we are placing the burden really heavily on the person who is getting the increase in wage by saying, well, we can't really help you. We just have to go with whatever someone producing is putting out.
Yeah, look, there are some complicated relationships between these things. And when we put up the rates of accommodation supplement, for example, there was a big discussion about whether landlords just put their rents up. When things like working for families are in place and go up, is that just an excuse for people to keep wages lower than they might otherwise do? Mm-hmm. But of course, if you take those things away, then there's also an outrage that, you know, people need that sort of support. So I think I don't think anyone's disagreeing that we want to see New Zealand be a much higher wage economy than we have been. And if you look at some of the OECD measures, New Zealand is a, you know, fantastic top-ranking country in lots of areas, but actually in terms of our relative wages, it isn't that high. What we're saying is it's not as simple as simply passing a law to force people to pay more, because if you do that too fast and too hard, you actually hurt the very people you're trying to help, because when the cost of living goes up and the price of goods go up, the people who feel it the most are those on the lowest wages.
Yeah.
And that's not just me making that up, that's a, you know, well-established fact. So we're very conscious that we have to lift wages by having a more productive, more innovative, more highly skilled economy, not simply passing through legislation that says, right, now everyone must be paid this, because if you do that without changing any of the other settings in the economy, the thing that we see happen is just costs go up.
Mm.
And when that happens, as I say, it's actually the people on those lowest incomes who find that the hardest, when the cost of everything you have to have goes up far more than the cost of things that, you know, are nice to have.
Mm. I'm going to jump on to what we've seen in a report recently about an increase in spending on consultancy in government departments. So that's come out saying that some departments are having up to 50% increase from last year on consultancy. Some people have gone about pointing the finger at nationals' choices. I hear you already jumping at the gun.
Yeah, we always seem to get back to pointing the finger.
I know, yeah. Well, I mean, it's just...
I know.
It's just something that's come up where people have said the choice for National to limit full-time staff back when they first came in.
That's a cop-out. We're talking about what's happened over the last year, right?
Mm.
So these are decisions. The government took office in October last year, and actually all the time they were in opposition, they jumped up and down and got all outraged about spending on contractors. And, yep, we did put in place caps in the core public service, and we excluded, you know, frontline staff from that, because we don't think New Zealanders are particularly well-served when there's a whole lot of money going into bureaucracy and middle management and not the frontline services. And actually, we kept a pretty tight control on contractor spend. Yes, we use contractors still, because when you're doing short-term, one-off projects, that's the most effective way to do it. But what we're talking about in that report is over the last year, all under the control of this new government, as you say, in some areas it's gone up by 50%, which is just the most hypocritical approach from a party that, as I say, in opposition, were up and down and outraged about this stuff. And it actually goes to one of the things that I get really, I don't say worked up about, but you know, something that I'm really focused on, which is when you look at governments and what they're doing, you can't just measure them by how much they spend. So a government might spend a whole lot more money on the welfare system than another, but that doesn't help New Zealanders if that just means a whole lot more public servants and middle managers and bureaucrats. What matters at the end of the day, I think, is whether the people who need government support the most are getting more of the services they need and more effectively. So if people just look at the headline spend, they say, oh, well, these guys are spending more, that must be a good thing. Well, actually, not necessarily. Are people better off? Are they getting the help they need? Are they getting the health services they need? Are they getting the education they need? And so I think actually the public discussion should be far more around the quality of spend by government, not just who can write the biggest check. And this is a classic example. A whole lot more consultants working in core government departments in Wellington isn't going to help the lives of one family, you know, who's struggling out there to deal with kids who need special education or maybe domestic violence or who are looking for a house. And all of those things are important issues. So I'm all for looking at how we handle those things better.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to take a lot of convincing that a whole lot more money spent on consultants and bureaucrats is the best way of spending those dollars.
Yeah, absolutely. I think more what people were trying to talk about when they were talking about limiting full-time employment in these departments was what kind of ends up happening is you have a limit that results in people finding other means to get that extra support. The Ministry of Social Development just came out this morning saying that they did not have the resources to handle the housing crisis that was happening in New Zealand.
No, they didn't say that, actually. They came out this morning saying they haven't had the resources to deal with the big increase over the last year.
Yeah.
And that's a very different thing. So I would... We were very careful, I think, to make sure that they did have the resources. But equally, I've run businesses in the private sector. I've worked in the private sector, and obviously I've been a minister in government. And I can tell you there is the work rates and the efficiencies are very different. Now, you can have a lot of people doing a lot of busy work, but whether they're actually achieving the outcomes for New Zealanders is something we constantly kept an eye on. So what MSD have said around housing is actually over the course of this calendar year, they haven't been able to keep up. Now, I could get into a whole bunch of reasons why we think that's in a large part because of the restrictions on the private landlord market. We've seen more and more people unable to get rentals and turn up at MSD looking for housing assistance. But that's not a reflection of what happened under our time at all.
No. What I'm more so meaning is, like, how do you think government should be handling that increase and rather than going for consultancy?
I think one thing I would say, and this is where I wouldn't want to jump up and down on what's happening, I do think you have to look at it a little bit case by case. So I think it's for each minister and each department to go through with pretty much a fine-tooth comb and work out in each instance whether it's justified. Now, if consultants are being used just as a sort of a way of topping up FTEs and sort of on an ongoing basis, that's hard to justify. If you genuinely are bringing in specialists to do short-term or one-off projects or redesign work where it wouldn't make sense to have that expertise on staff all the time, then actually that can be an effective and efficient way of doing something and a better use of taxpayers' money. So, I don't know, let's take an example. Let's say MSD and the housing department need to do a 1 in 10 year redesign of their software that they use to allocate accommodation supplement. You wouldn't necessarily have those software engineers on staff at MSD the whole time, but it would make sense to bring them in as contractors to manage that project.
Mm.
So you see what I mean? So there are
situations
where I think that's going to be the right thing to do, but where it just starts becoming business as usual on an ongoing basis, then I think that does have to be very tightly managed by the minister in each case.
Absolutely. I'm just going to end on a lighter note and not be berating you anymore, but I'm just curious. It's November now, and I'm already hearing Christmas music coming out. I'm wondering if you get annoyed by Christmas music this time of year too.
Oh, look, I do a little bit. I sort of think the shops, as soon as they get through Halloween, which seems to have gotten bigger and bigger, they straight into Christmas. I'm seeing those Christmas decorations in shops at the end of October, beginning of November, and I sort of thought, really? I mean, I'm a bit of, I like Christmas, I really enjoy it, but if you started at the beginning of November, man, by December 25th, I am a wee bit over it. So, I'm all for keeping it for 2 or 3 weeks before Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm exactly in the same boat as you on this one.
Well, there you go. Okay. Something we can agree on, Laura, that's a nice way to end.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be talking with you next week.
All right, have a good weekend.
You too, see ya.
Bye.
The National Party's Amy Adams on 95 BFM. The Wire.